Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Climb to Investment Excellence, a practitioner's guide to building exceptional portfolios and teams, by Anna Marshall. Narrated by Kate Coventry. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. Prologue. Somewhere between the bottom of the climb and the summit is the answer to the mystery of why we climb. Greg Child. Climbing a technically difficult mountain like Everest, K2, or Denali is similar to creating an excellent investment portfolio. Being excellent at investing is hard. Climbing to the top of Everest or Kilimanjaro is hard. Thousands of alpinists make the attempt to reach the summit every year, both in mountain climbing and investing. Many fail to move successfully from base camp through to the summit. This book is a handbook to help anyone with a fiduciary responsibility for overseeing or managing significant sums of capital. Many books on investing suggest there is one mountain worth climbing, one right way to do it, one definitive answer. I would argue that similar to ascending a mountain summit, there is no single route or definitive guide to the top. Every organization has different goals, operating requirements, and priorities. A long-term investment strategy provides a roadmap that rarely is able to anticipate the cyclical and secular hazards in capital markets and the economy. There are limitations to any climbing plan, and they must be overcome to reach the top. The art of investing is how investors execute the plan in spite of the challenges on the way to the summit. My goal in this book is to give you the tools to construct an excellent investment program, along with the courage to adapt plans to reach the summit. Alpinism is similar to investing in that it is the interplay between the technical skills and endurance of the climber/investor and the conditions of the mountain/market that result in a successful summit. Before heading into any climb, having well-honed expert technique, the right climbing gear, and knowing the routes to ascend are essential requirements for a successful climb. However, skill and a plan are not enough. To climb successfully to the summit, one must be able to adapt quickly and be able to navigate under unexpected changes in the environment. The mountains and markets are full of cautionary tales. The main goal, besides success in making it to the top, is survival. Investing and climbing involve repetitive processes of thinking, problem-solving, and executing. Thinking outside traditional frameworks, solving problems, and then executing the solution 100 times a year and thousands of times in a career is how to build muscle memory. It takes years of practice and living at altitudes where the air is thin and ever-changing to be able to ascend and not succumb to the wear and tear of the climb. Importantly, no one ever climbs alone. There is a team that works together to improve the probability of making it to the summit. The Chief Investment Officer, CIO, is the expedition guide charged with the responsibility of making sure the team makes it to the summit. As with any intensive sport, discipline, hard work, and practice are essential. The leader must take a group of competitive individuals and form a team that is attuned to the tempo of the mountain and the hazards of storms. During my career, I have identified attractive investment strategies only to be faced with unanticipated hazards. From my early days as a high-yield credit analyst, I learned fundamental value didn't protect downside in the face of the Drexel Burnham Lambert bankruptcy in 1990. During the 1990s, I was recruited to summit a new, technically challenging peak, investing in emerging markets. I soon realized that company fundamentals could be blown off course by exogenous factors, currency devaluations, political coups, etc., that suddenly appeared and turned into full-blown storms called the Tequila Crisis of 1994, the Asian Crisis of 1997, and the Russia Crisis of 1998. Wanting the challenges of a new adventure, I set my sights on a new summit. Managing global equities only to be caught in a blinding snowstorm when the internet bubble popped in 2000 to 2001. Once adjusted to the new environment, the strategic plan was yet again taken off course by 9/11 in 2001 and the spectacular corporate frauds of Enron and WorldCom in 2003. Successfully managing client portfolios during difficult times increased my resilience and ingrained a determination to survive whatever hazards came my way. In 2004, I was asked to join a new expedition team to climb the most challenging mountain of my career. Lori Hoagland was assembling a new expedition team to take the $4 billion Hewlett Foundation endowment to new heights. He recognized a fellow investor and believed my skills in global fixed income and equities would be of great use as we built the Hewlett diversified portfolio. I lacked certain technical skills necessary to get to first camp. He took the time to teach me the importance of governance, clear objectives, asset allocation, and developing a policy portfolio. His expectations of me were clear from the start. He expected me to take over as the expedition team leader somewhere between first and second camp. Even this plan didn't go as anticipated. As it turns out, there was so much work involved in ensuring that the investment program could weather the storm that he and I, along with the rest of the team, knew we would be stronger staying on course together. Very little went according to our expectations. When the Great Financial Crisis, GFC, hit in 2008, the storm was clearly surrounding us. This was the moment in which Lori and I had the critical conversation of what it would take to lead the portfolio and team to safer ground. We knew in theory what it would take to recover strength and trek on. It took grit and determination to keep moving with little visibility ahead. Being successful in investing requires a mix of theory, practice, and luck. If the terrain and ice conditions didn't change, or if the sun, wind, and snow were perfectly predictable, then machines could do what we do. Combining theory and practice ensures that the climbing or investing team has the chance to change path, slow or accelerate the pace, and it improves the chance of making it to the top. The alternative is to wait out the elements as they hit parts of the endowment portfolio. Some people believe machines can do what we do, but I would argue that investor behavior is difficult to predict in the moment. This is the reason why, despite excellent mathematical models, expected volatility still differs from realized volatility. However, we are in the early stages of knowing the capabilities of artificial intelligence, and some degree of technological disruption of the investment office is likely to occur over the coming decade. This book offers a practical guide to things any investor or anyone serving as a fiduciary on a board or investment committee should consider before deciding on the objective of an investment program. The practical advice combines 18 years as a GP/investor and 18 years as an allocator of capital. It sets out the skills needed to have a high probability of succeeding on the ascent, and also takes into account the luck and the resilience investors must have to climb to the summit in the investing world. It doesn't have magic formulas nor quick fixes, because investing takes hard work and the ability to think quickly and adapt to a changing environment. However, it does provide easy-to-reference lists of things to consider when faced with decision points and gives ideas on how to adapt plans in order to survive and continue the climb when conditions force a change and things go wrong. The book has three sections. The first is focused on preparing for the climb and reaching base camp. Think of this part as the chapters on the logistics that will be crucial to make sure you and your team have a successful expedition. These are the chapters where the organization identifies the summit for the expedition, responsibilities are clarified, and the team has the time to adjust to the altitude, the headaches, the pressure, etc. You need to make sure everyone involved in the expedition, including the client, the board, and the investment committee, is clear on the goal, the tools, and the capability of the team. The pacing of the expedition is established, and the decision of whether the team will carry heavy packs or lightweight packs is made. Reaching base camp and setting asset allocation policy can only be done after the logistics have been put into place and the pack lists have been checked. The second part of the book has the practical aspects of the ascent from first camp through third camp. These chapters cover the primary responsibilities of managing an investment portfolio. Developing the policy portfolio serves as the first resting spot after leaving base camp. Between first camp and second camp, the team implements the policy portfolio, adapting and using the portfolio management tools available to navigate ever-changing conditions. Moving from second camp to third camp, manager selection and diligence offer up different types of hazards. The third part of the book is the final push to the summit, where leadership and endurance play a critical role. This is the most dangerous part of the climb, and also where most teams fail. This part provides tips on setting best practices for your investment program and managing all of the members of the climbing team. The investment team, the board, the managers, and the other climbers on the mountain. Creating team culture and inspiring the team as the air thins and the ice storms come, more often than not, are just a few of the challenges in managing highly competitive and ambitious climbers. Finally, in reaching the summit, an investor is forced to look within to one's competitive edge in order to find the way home. There are three underlying themes woven into every chapter because they are always top of mind for a successful alpinist. The first is having a well-thought-out strategy or plan as to how the team will ascend. The second is risk management, because every decision must weigh the promise of progress against the risk to the team and the mission. The third is trust, because the alpinist needs to be someone who is deeply trusted by their expedition team and other climbers on the mountain. The organizations we work for trust that we will be successful ascending to the summit, taking only as much risk as necessary to achieve our objective. Finally, a word of encouragement as you attempt the climb. It takes years to prepare physically and mentally to be able to ascend to the summit. Many of the greatest alpinists spent years training as porters, learning from experienced alpinist teams. As porters who prepare the route and carry supplies, they spent untold hours observing the mistakes made along the way, analyzing the paths chosen, and the difficult in-the-moment decisions made. I spent the first 9 years of my career as an analyst, porter, learning from great investors around me. I observed how teams were formed and how they fell apart. I learned that having tools and skills is not enough. I learned to identify courageous, resilient leaders in the face of adversity, and also the joy that comes from taking advantage of clear skies and cheering on the team as they triumph over unforeseen obstacles. Part 1. Base Camp. The Adventure Begins. Preparing for Base Camp. 1. Identifying the summit. Attempting to climb Everest is an intrinsically irrational act, a triumph of desire over sensibility. John Krakauer, Into Thin Air. Whether you are starting a new investment office, creating an investment strategy for a new client, or the investment office has existed for decades, it is important to ensure that the objective of the investment program is clear. Different types of organizations have different priorities and objectives. Almost every organization has conflicting priorities between the staff and investment committee, IC, and board. Regardless of whether the organization is a family office, pension fund, endowment, or foundation, there are several areas where the board and IC need to reconcile different priorities to develop a clear and cohesive role of the investment program in funding the needs of the organization in the near and long term. Table 1.1 sets out four areas to consider. Just because Everest is there doesn't mean that this is the right goal and that investors have to climb that particular summit. How complex one makes a portfolio is a choice, just like choosing a less difficult mountain to climb. The portfolio should not be too complex relative to the needs of the organization or too difficult to implement, taking into account the skill set and resources of the investment team. Managing a diversified institutional portfolio that delivers consistently superior returns is hard. Unless an investment program is staffed with the technical skills and access to top investment managers, perhaps choosing a portfolio with low cost and liquid funds with less complexity may be the best option. The goal is to reach the summit and have an excellent investment program. The view from the summit is worthwhile, no matter what mountain one has chosen to climb. Table 1.1. Considerations for identifying the summit. 1. Setting the investment objective. 2. Understanding constraints and payout needs. 3. Agreement on risk tolerance. 4. Setting the time horizon. Setting the investment objective. Since the investment program is designed to achieve the investment objective, it really is worth having a fresh conversation to ensure the organization has a clear understanding of the investment program objective formally set in the Investment Policy Statement, IPS, approved by the Board of Directors. The IPS serves as the North Star for strategic asset allocation, risk management, and liquidity management of an institutional portfolio. It goes without saying that the foremost responsibility of the CIO is to provide liquidity to fund the obligations of the organization and to achieve the investment objective. On occasion, institutions choose to modify the IPS to reflect changes in spending needs or other priorities. It is natural to expect institutions to shift priorities over time as new leadership takes on new strategic direction and the natural rotation of members of the board surfaces new ideas. The CIO is responsible for ensuring that the latest version of the IPS reflects current priorities, because it is the clearest directive of the strategy that must be implemented to achieve the objectives of the institution. Defining what success looks like is key. Despite having a clearly stated IPS, a CIO should not assume that a successful investment program will be judged in the same way by the board and by the institution. Agreement between the board and the IC and clear communication with the CIO on the criteria used to judge success of the investment program are critical to long-term achievement of the goal. The CIO needs to understand whether the IC thinks of returns in absolute terms or in relative terms, and whether returns will be judged relative to the benchmark or relative to a narrow set of peer organizations. Importantly, defining success does not have to be complicated. In fact, the simpler and clearer it is, the better for all concerned. Think of an IPS as the identification of the summit and the packs and loads the expedition will have to carry to the summit. The organization can choose to burden the expedition with heavy packs, restrictions, or encourage lightweight packs to encourage adaptability. Importantly, the IPS reflects the key priorities of the organization. Coming up, I provide examples of an IPS from three distinct organizations with different priorities. At Hewlett Foundation, the priority is to preserve the spending power of the endowment in perpetuity by focusing on growing the endowment and on disciplined spending. The Hewlett Foundation seeks to maintain or grow current asset size and spending power in real, inflation-adjusted terms, with risk at a level appropriate to the Foundation's program objectives. There may be occasions when financial markets are down in ways that could require spending reductions in order to meet this objective. The board will ordinarily reduce spending in a downturn in order to mitigate the potential reduction in the Foundation's real value. For purposes of this policy statement, a downturn is defined as negative return before payout in a calendar year. Upon a vote of the majority of the board may choose not to reduce spending in exceptional circumstances. Some may consider defining a downturn as simply as a negative return in a calendar year as being too short-term oriented. Every institution is different. From experience, our conversations with the Hewlett Board have focused on high sensitivity to a material decline in the value of the investment portfolio. Hewlett's spending policy is to spend between 4.75% and 5.75% of the Foundation's assets averaged over a three-year period. As a pragmatic matter, we usually use about 5.1%. If the investment return of the Hewlett Endowment in any calendar year is negative, our plan calls for budgeting an amount equal to 5.1% of the estimated assets at the end of that year. In other words, without three-year smoothing. At Skoll Foundation, an organization where the donor is actively increasing funding, the priority is to have the endowment portfolio investments aligned with the mission. The Skoll Foundation seeks to use all its resources to further its mission, which provides the overarching framework for management of its financial capital. The Foundation acknowledges that the management of its assets must include the integration of prudent financial practices with principles of environmental stewardship, inclusive economic growth, and overall alignment with the Foundation's mission. In service of this mission, the specific investment goals of the Foundation are 1. To generate income necessary to fund the Foundation's spending on grants, program-related investments, and operations over the long term. 2. To grow the real value of the Foundation's financial assets over the long term with consideration of the Foundation's spending levels. And 3. To seek investments in funds and companies whose practices and products further advance the Foundation's mission, while avoiding investments in entities whose actions work counter to the Foundation's mission, unless the Foundation determines that engagement with such entities will result in developments that may benefit relevant communities. At an undisclosed family office, the objective is compounding of the endowment and diversification from the entrepreneur's primary source of wealth. The objective of the investment program is to generate superior risk-adjusted returns to compound the investment portfolio, taking into account the risk tolerance of the family. The investment program should over time provide diversification away from the core business of the family. The investment program is intended to provide liquidity to support the family's philanthropic efforts and payout needs, as approved by the board. While a CIO aims to construct an optimal investment portfolio, the reality is that there are many factors that must be considered in setting the IPS, such as those listed in Table 1.2. Understanding constraints and payout. The IPS and the answers to the questions referenced in Table 1.2 inform the constraints the CIO must incorporate in developing the policy portfolio. Whether an organization is expected to exist in perpetuity or not impacts the level of risk and payout of the investment portfolio. It's helpful if the board incorporates a spending rule within the IPS so that the CIO can construct an investment portfolio that takes into consideration future cash flow needs. The spending rule is a commitment by the board that, in any given year, the cash flow needs from the investment portfolio will be limited to the agreed upon level. The discipline on spending budget sits with the board, not the CIO. Board members are tasked with deciding whether to maximize spending today or maximizing the probability that the organization will be able to fund payout in perpetuity. The CIO's role is to make the board aware of the implications of spending annually in excess of the return of the endowment and then to respect the board's decision. Another point to consider is whether the organization has additional sources of capital. In practice, rapid changes in the denominator, net asset value, create challenges for the active management of the endowment. The board should be aware of these challenges and provide as much guidance as possible, knowing that the denominator is unpredictable. University endowments and hospitals, as well as pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, and family offices, typically receive additional sources of funding into the endowment portfolio. Boards and ICs should recognize that the CIO cannot control either the contributions or the payout from the portfolio, yet is responsible for maintaining the agreed-upon asset allocation policy. In light of this, there are likely to be periods when the deployment of the portfolio varies materially from the approved policy asset allocation mix. The illiquidity tolerance of an organization needs to incorporate whether the institution's budget is flexible. Institutions with variable payout or where the portfolio generates only a portion of the spending budget tend to have higher illiquidity tolerance than organizations with a fixed payout or where the portfolio generates 100% of payout. Organizations with a significant amount of multi-year commitments in the budget also have reduced flexibility in moderating spending. At Hewlett, 100% of the spending budget is generated by the endowment. Because of the long-term strategic work we fund through our grantees, the board and staff place great importance on maintaining the granting budget relatively stable. While Hewlett gives general operating support and mostly one-year grants, the intent of the organization is to fund work within our strategic priorities for many years and maintain staff level. This type of giving means we have some flexibility in endowment spending. Working together, Hewlett's president, CFO, and I designed a flexible budgeting mechanism whereby 80% of the budgeted spending is allocated to the programs at the start of the year, and the remaining 20% is unallocated in case spending needs to be curtailed if there is a significant market dislocation. Another consideration in setting the investment objective is the desire of the board to incorporate non-investment criteria in the investment program. Many institutions have historically limited non-investment guidelines to prohibitions on certain types of investments. For practical purposes, even when the IPS does not specify mission alignment, there needs to be common sense consideration by the investment team that the portfolio should not make investments that run counter to the issue areas the organization funds. More recently, some boards have added a request to proactively invest in a diverse set of areas that advance interests of the institution. In cases like these, the IPS should specifically state goals for the investment program, as well as the criteria that should be used in managing this type of portfolio. The following are the specific details included in Skoll Foundation's IPS, as an example of the clarity the board and IC have provided the investment team regarding the evaluation of fund managers and monitoring of the investment portfolio for impact. The CIO and team accepted the new IPS and adapted the expedition plan to achieve the objective. Skoll's investments in external managers must be evaluated on the integration of environmental, social, and governance factors into investment strategy and process, including engagement on advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion within the investment firm. Special consideration is given to reducing net GHG, greenhouse gas emissions, attributable to the Skoll Foundation's portfolio to zero, integrating significant sustainability considerations into the investment process, and increasing mission-aligned investments that further the philanthropic objectives of the foundation. The objective is generating a creative, risk-adjusted return. Table 1.2. Factors to consider in IPS. Is the organization perpetual or spend down? Are there additional contributions of capital into the endowment? What is the payout expected from the endowment portfolio? Is there a spending rule in place? How much of the organization's budget depends upon the endowment? Any
sample complete. Ready to continue?